So it's like going to the office the next day. I go, we were on MTV. And Kurt Lauder says, you know, he goes through a couple of news snippets, and then all of a sudden he picks up this issue of Hot Rod Magazine with ZZ Top on the cover.
Awesome.
And goes, the guys from ZZ Top have a car on the cover of Hot Rod Magazine. And I'm like scurrying to try and get a
picture.
Date us again. A VHS in the machine to record this thing, right? And I missed it. I totally missed it. Because the one I picked already had a little piece of tape over it so it wouldn't record. And I was like,
what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I have no idea about this technology.
Yes, okay. Yeah, it's ancient technology. Right after right. Audio cassettes, right? Hey, welcome to Car Guy Confessions, brought to you by ARP. I'm Jeff Smith. This is my car buddy Cam Benty and car builder Steve Strope, and we're going to tell you some stories. So we'd like to thank our sponsor, ARP. I build lots of engines as part of the stuff that I do, and I use them exclusively because they're fantastic. I don't use stock bolts because it's just so dangerous. So especially engine stuff is really, really good. Steve, you use them for building cars, right?
Yeah, I need them. They're an insurance policy for its internals on an engine. I know it's long-lasting and durable and done. They're properly engineered. And also, it makes everything we do look even better. It's jewelry for your car.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I was going to say the same thing. This stuff looks so beautiful coming out of the package. I mean, it's all oiled and it's ready to go. I mean, sometimes you just like want one on your desk that you can like look at and play with, that kind of thing. But I've used them all the time, and I use them in a lot of racing stuff.
So check them out at arp-bolts.com or check out their catalog. You'll find everything you're looking for. Just three friends just hanging out, talking about all kinds of crazy stuff. And I thought what we would talk about today was the adventure of the Cadzilla cover. Because
explain,
that was
though, what is that?
Well, okay, so we have to tell
who is he
Cadzilla
and why is he?
So,
okay.
So I was the editor of Hot Rod Magazine. Boyd Coddington was building Cadzilla. All you have to do is just Google that.
For
if you don't,
the coolest dude in the world, Billy Gibbons.
Yeah. Billy Gibbons, yeah. From ZZ Top.
From ZZ Top.
And they built this
my host
fort
on my TV.
Yes,
show.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
And so Boyd Coddington started out with a 48 Cadillac sedanette and created
the coolest car ever.
Oh,
sorry, I hit the table.
As a custom car, certainly among the top 10 ever custom cars ever.
My favorite.
So a spectacular car, but a custom. So this is 1991 maybe, somewhere in there.
It's probably a good bet.
Yeah. I guess I should have been professional and looked it up. But
before
that.
Which time with Hot Rod was that?
What was that?
You were editor of Hot Rod.
I was editor of Hot Rod Magazine. I was editor from 87 to 93. So it would be in that range somewhere. Probably around 1990.
No. I'm seeing the cover of my
88?
Head, best of. Yeah, it's 87 80, or 88.
88. It's 88. Okay. It's 88.
Because I went to CarCraft in 87.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so, yes. So, so 89. Thank you very much.
It was 89?
It was 1989.
From the research department.
From the research department. The instant.
I wish the guy at the camera could swing around to see the research department.
Fact checker.
It's a guy on a phone.
It's a fact checker.
But behind him is a sandblast cabinet.
So we had Boyd had finished the car. It is it is really a deep purple. It looks black. It photographs black,
purple,
but it is a deep, deep purple, and it is this spectacular shape. So the car literally was the most interesting part of the car was the rear of the car. So Randy had done
back,
a complete feature,
back, yep.
Which is a whole other story on how he did all that, because he did it in a studio, but it looked like it was in this cavern or a subway or something. It was really the backdrop illustration from Spaceballs.
Yes.
He told me that story. So he rented this backdrop, which had this converging lines, looked like a sewer, actually. And then he had flaming gas cans and all the trash cans.
But the centerfold, wasn't the centerfold,
was the centerfold. That was the same set, yes.
Oh.
So he shot the cover in the same set he did the centerfold. So we did a centerfold. So we get all this stuff. This is the most spectacular car. We've been building this thing up for probably a year and a half, 2 years.
Following along with it.
Gray Baskerville had been doing all this series of articles on the story. It was spectacular.
Mr. Flip-flops,
And so it got to the point where, you know, and if you don't understand magazine publishing, you would think, well, the editor just picks the cover and it runs. And he makes the decision and life is good. No. So, especially with Hot Rod Magazine, because you're really, Motor Trend and Hot Rod were the two biggest, still are, well, the only ones that are left now from what was the old Peterson, but those are the two big magazines. Hot Rod started in 1948, Motor Trend started in 49 or 50?
49 or 50.
A couple years later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so normally we would pick a cover and it would go through the channels and we never heard back, which meant, you know, if there's nobody questioned it, everybody's happy. And all of a sudden I was called up to the seventh floor, to the top of the building and I get there with my publisher, Harry Hibbler, and John Dinah, who was our group publisher. And it's a big, long, rectangular table like this one. And there's like 10 people in the room. It's like, uh-oh. You know, this is not normal.
That's a big audience for that.
It's a big
room.
Audience.
Yes, absolutely.
And the president of the company is there, Fred Wangro.
That's right.
Mr. Peterson's not there. He was never in these
Was
meetings.
The polar bear there?
The polar bear was, yeah. He shot a polar bear. Mr. It's Peterson shot a polar bear with a .45 automatic.
And, from a helicopter.
From a helicopter. And they stuffed it and put it in this big plastic case. And it was supposed to be, you ever heard this story?
Oh, yeah, I heard this story.
We'll spin off of this thing real quick. This polar bear was like, what, he's like 8 feet tall.
It was stuffed. It was
stuffed.
And taxidermy.
Like this. Right. And he's when they moved from the old building to 8490 Sunset, which was Sunset and La Cienega,
correct,
they were supposed to put the bear on the first floor,
correct,
in the foyer as you came,
correct,
in the front door.
Because that's friendly.
Yes. But a prankster who will remain unnamed, he's since passed away.
You can name him.
Well, Tom Medley.
There you go.
So Tom Medley.
Who was Stroker McGurk. That was the guy for that.
The guy who created Stroker McGurk.
Yeah.
And he put, there was a sticker on where everything was supposed to go, what floor it was supposed to go on. So the bear had a sticker on it that said first floor, right?
Right.
Well, he took it off and put the seventh floor. So Peterson shows up. They did the whole move over the weekend. So he shows up.
And the polar bear is on the seventh floor.
Rolls into the foyer.
Says, where's my bear?
Where's my bear? It's like, well, okay, they probably just didn't get around to it yet. It's no big deal. Punches the seventh floor, goes up the seventh floor.
And there
he is. The elevator door opens, and there's the bear going, on the seventh floor. The hell is the bear doing up here?
They put it in the
And
elevator.
Then they had to charge him extra because they had to disassemble.
The bear?
Not the bear. Had to disassemble the elevator.
The bear didn't unscrew.
To get the bear up there because it was
awesome.
So huge.
Yeah.
Perfect. And they charged him like an extra $1,000, sure, or $2,000, whatever it was, to move it, you know. But then once it's up there, he stayed there because
perma
bear. So I would take my kids up to the seventh floor and say, here, watch this. And they're like, this is, you know, they're like, whoa.
I tried to get the antlers in the elevator one time. They don't fit. That was on Hunting. Hunting was on six. I tried to get them up there.
We another story on elevators at the 8490 building. The night I got stuck in the elevator.
I
was there
when
for
I was
two and
Argus.
A half hours and had to crawl out.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah. So the elevator stuck in between the floors. And I could pry the doors open, uh-huh, right? But if you turned the power off, it set off an alarm. And the bell rang, and it was really annoying. So I turned the ringer off, got on the phone, you know, because there's a phone to contact the elevator company and said, you know, hey, I'm stuck in the elevator. And I go, well, it's going to be 4 hours before we can come get you.
Smooth.
Great, because there's three other people stuck in L.A. in elevators, and you're number four. So, sorry, you got to wait.
Seems to be a bad thing.
So I'm laying on the floor on the elevator. There's a slot about this high between the floor of the elevator and the ceiling of the
next level.
And it was.
I saw this in a movie.
It was the second floor, I think.
Yeah.
Was that where the gun guys were, the hunting guys, second floor?
Maybe. Yes, I think you're right.
Second
floor. Yeah.
It's all the way down when it's stuck.
Set up for a movie. You're going to come crawling through a crawl space into a room with a lot of guns.
He had no shoes on, and they shot the glass.
This is in the old days when we had flats. Literally had the actual pages of the magazine in a box about this thick that you would carry down to a guy in the parking lot. It was a messenger who would take it to LAX and fly it to Effingham, Illinois, to the printing shop.
Crossroads Press.
So here, so they come out with their box, and they're like, the hell are you doing here? You know, it's like, stuck in the elevator. Should be obvious. And they go, well, I said, can you help me out of here? And they go, well, you know, what do you want to do? And I said, well, here's the issue. I said, I ought to just crawl out of here, but I'm afraid that if I get halfway out, then the elevator all of a sudden takes off and slices you right in half, right? So that's like,
I've seen that
not
in a movie too.
Yeah. So that wasn't going to work. So they're looking at me going, well, make a decision because we got a book to ship. You know, so we don't really care. You know, there's another elevator here and we're just going to do our deal or you can crawl out. So they yanked me out of there and then I escaped. But yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then
So we should get back to Cadzilla.
Anyway, we
went to a bear on the wrong floor.
That's right.
We've digressed. Lots of Peterson stories.
Oh, yeah.
And these are not the colorful ones. The really colorful ones I didn't experience. They happened with John Asher and Kirschner Bob and that.
I had some good times at Argus.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah. Argus. Now,
I've heard lots of stories. So anyway, so I'm called up now to the seventh floor. I walk in, there is all these management people, and it's a square built, a rectangular table like this. Fred, the president of the company, Wayne Gross, sits there.
Yep. He's a million years old.
He was a million years old, at least. John Diana, Harry Hibbler, and myself
were way older than me, on the editorial side.
Yeah. And then that side of the table was all the management side, which was circulation.
Right.
And for some reason, Lee Kelly was probably at that time would have been the publisher at Motor Trend.
He definitely was, yes. Yes, because I was working
so,
on the custom
like,
books.
Why is Motor Trend here? So Lee's a friend, and Lee had been previous editor of Hot Rod.
The best boss I ever had.
Absolutely fantastic guy. So, and he's on the management side, which is odd, because I would have thought he's a magazine guy. He's a magazine
guy.
That's where he came from, not really management style. But anyway, so the circulation people immediately start to attack us because there are so many things wrong with this cover. First of all, it's a black cover. I said, "Well, actually, no. It's candy brandy wine."
Because they're looking, because they're looking for high impact.
It's a custom car.
Yeah,
it's a Cadillac, and it's the back of a custom car. You violated all of the major, cover rules. Of course, there aren't any written rules. It's just you should know this. You know, the assumption is you should know this. What's wrong with you? And so we start to deliver. It's like, well, it's the most interesting part of the car. And this is a spectacular car. It's going to be,
And our readership knows.
They know it's coming.
They know it's coming.
And
they're waiting
top,
for it. And
you've got the music
ZZ Top.
Pole,
there's
right?
all,
so
these
you got all these things coming
this
through.
Is, no, yeah. we're not changing. And it's too late. Yeah. And we've spent tens of thousands of dollars this year. I mean, I blew probably a third of my total editorial budget for the entire year on this issue, right? So it's like we loaded up all the dice and just went, we're going for it because this is such a spectacular car. And it's like all the things you just said, ZZ Top, all these other connections.
Yeah, I can tell you as a reader in upstate New York,
you were waiting
your
for
impact
it.
Was exactly
well,
what
yeah.
you
so,
wanted.
Right. So I present all this information. I'm thinking, okay, they're going to accept it. And they went, no, you got to change it. It's like, well, change to what? It's too late. I mean, we're a week away from shipping this book to the press. You want me to just throw up on a cover and do it? I mean, what do you want me to do?
What color do you have?
And, of course, they don't care about the details of that. Management say, just fix it.
Right.
And it's like, no.
Yeah.
No, we're not doing that.
Yeah, and you were one of the few. I give you super credit. You were one of the best editors they ever had. I truly mean that. Not as a reader, I agree with that. And as a peer or somewhat some kind of near peer.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
which is like near beer but different.
That's right. I really thought you were an amazing editor. When I went to CarCraft after you, that was a very tough act to follow.
I'm sure it was.
Because I pushed hard.
I mean, I don't know if I ever told you this story. At the end of your column every month, they would have you sign it right at the bottom.
Yes, right.
And my managing editor once told me once, she says, you know, Jeff Smith was my signature, and she was mad at me about something because she wanted me to change something, and I wouldn't. Tracy Hershey's.
Tracy would do that.
And if she's listening, you know, God bless you, you know, because
you
saved us many, many times.
Many
but
times.
But
me
she
too.
Said she was mad at me about something. She goes, you know, your signature at the bottom of the line, that doesn't say Jeff Smith.
Yeah.
You know what the staff says it says? I go, no. She says, it says tough shit. I went,
probably
I'll
did.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Probably
I'll
did.
Take that as a compliment.
Probably
I mean,
did.
You have to take charge. So, yes. you know, I'm,
so
you I'm,
told
I'm
them
ambushed,
not changing.
I'm right. ambushed at the top of this meeting, and the manager's going, just change it. We're not, you know, and you just have to fix it.
Right.
And so, you know, we start dancing. It's like, I can't change it.
Right.
Harry, God bless him. Harry Hibbler was my publisher, and he was supporting us. And so he was fully on board with the whole thing. He had been involved with this whole project from the very beginning, and he's supporting me. John Diana, not so much. Just kind of sitting over there.
What a
waiting,
shock.
Waiting for the political winds to change.
Yeah, he's
right?
seeing how
he's
quote,
measuring
seeing
which
how this
way
plays
is the wind
out.
Blowing, right?
Yep.
And so he's not saying anything. He should be supporting us because we are who are making him look good.
He was short on that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Thank you very much. So, okay, so
John goes back and forth.
This meeting has now gone on for like 15 or 20 minutes, and we're not getting anywhere because they're expecting me to go, yes, sir, whatever you want, three bags full.
Sure.
And basically Harry are going, no, we're not doing that. We're sticking with this whole thing.
Yeah, Harry was with you.
And Harry was with me.
Ah,
and
good.
So he was on my side, but it was just us against the world,
yeah,
right?
Two against eight.
Lee's sitting over here, Lee Kelly, sitting over here being very quiet, not saying anything. And finally, Mr. Wangrove says, you know, Lee, you know, you're Motor Trend. You've been with Hot Rod Magazine for a long time. Really haven't heard from you.
Yes, great history.
What do you, and fantastic history, yeah. You know, and they really appreciated what he did, and his input was important. And so all of a sudden I was like, uh-oh, this is it. If he goes, you know, it's like, yeah. you know, right in the Roman times when the emperor goes and the guy dies, right? I'm thinking, he does this, I'm going to get a spear right through my chest. Right. And so I'm looking at him and thinking, this is it. This is all the cards are on the table, man. This is going to fly or it's not going to fly. And I have no idea how we're going to fix this if he says, I don't think this is a good idea. And there's more than better chance that he was going to say no because it violated all of those rules. And Lee says, well, you know, I think you ought to trust your editor and let him run what you want to do. And I was like, oh. So one of the things I like to do is always assemble an engine with ARP bolts. And it's not just because they're sponsors, but because it really does work. And the stuff is fantastic. I never have to worry about it. Steve, you building cars too.
Yeah,
right?
Actually, it's part of my baseline design plan when I'm building a car that's going to be shown or featured in a magazine. It's part of the plan to have that little bit of diamonds all over the engine bay or in the suspension.
Yeah, the stuff is beautiful. I remember a long time ago, I built the first time I ever touched it, 69 Z28. All of the water jacket holes had stripped out, and I learned about ARP studs.
So check them out at arp-bolts.com or check out their catalog. You'll find everything you're looking for. And the circulation department was livid, absolutely livid.
Which is a good thing.
And, yes, because...
Because we hated it was, those
and
guys.
And I never understood that confrontational relationship
it was horrible.
That we always had with them.
And, you know what it was? It was because Nigel thought he was smarter than anybody in the room.
He thought he was smarter than the editors.
He knew exactly. And all he did was he was a data guy. He was a data guy before
data-driven.
There were data guys.
Right.
This one did good. This one didn't good. What did these two have?
And if they all had green in them, then that was the answer. There was a green typeface that made it sell.
There was a little goat in the backyard. It's like, goats. You got to get goats. Where's the next goat? Where's the goat?
So luckily, the cover went. So then, and as we all know, it did very, very well. So then flash forward roughly about 2 months before the actually book comes out on sale. So I don't know if I've ever told you this part of the story.
No.
So
I got something for you
home,
too.
I go home and we're working on now 3 months down the road. We're working on a different magazine.
Because that's the cycle. 3 months.
Cycle. I mean, it's like as soon as you finish this one, it's like you don't take a week off. No, you start the next day on the next issue. You're already working on it. You know, you have to overlap them,
and
otherwise
you, start
you
with
won't
nothing
survive.
But blank pages.
Yeah.
Every month.
And that's the editor's nothing. That's the editor's nightmare, by the way, is blank pages.
Yes.
So anyway, so I go home and I'm gonna sit in front of the TV, and this is the old days where, you know, we're going to date ourselves again. Well, this is 1989, so this is, remember MTV? And the guy named Kurt Lauder had a little news program called The World News, and he had this little fake planet.
Yes, I remember it. I remember it well.
Over his shoulder.
Yeah.
And so I'm just channel flipping, and it's like, you know, MTV was, you know,
in its infancy.
Actually, had music videos on it.
Yeah.
Sure.
And
at
so I thought, well, I'll watch
music,
this for a second.
It
there's nothing else on. I'll just watch this for a second, you know, before I get attacked for some reason at home for, you know, you have to fix these three things. And Kurt Lauder says, you know, he goes through a couple of news snippets, and then all of a sudden he picks up this issue of Hot Rod Magazine with ZZ Top on the cover.
Awesome.
And goes, the guys from ZZ Top have a car on the cover of Hot Rod Magazine. And I'm like scurrying to try and get
a picture.
Date us again. A VHS in the machine to record this thing, right? And I missed it. I totally missed it because the one I picked already had a little piece of tape over it, so it wouldn't record. And I was like,
"What are you talking about?
Yeah.
I have no idea about this technology."
Yes, okay. Yeah, it's ancient technology. Right after audio cassettes, right? So it's like going to the office the next day. I go, "We were on MTV," and I go, "No, you weren't." But it was one of, if not the best selling cover ever.
I'm not surprised.
Which violated every rule on the planet as far as cars were concerned.
Yeah,
magazines were concerned.
But you had something going for you.
But the subject matter was so good.
It was super cool, and it was car guys.
Did you ever see the slogan?
So it didn't matter.
And then it was the centerfold on the inside as well.
Yeah,
so
awesome.
Which really was. And to give Randy Lawrence some credit, the photography was spectacular.
Beautiful.
It was very expensive, and I heard about it later, you know, when all the bills finally came afterwards.
Oh,
and John Dinah comes to my office and starts screaming at me for spending a third of my budget. It's like, dude, it was worth it. We hadn't got the sales numbers yet.
Yeah.
And then when you hit those home runs, everything else is forgotten,
yep.
you know, because you did bet. What you were supposed to do. Because we were evaluated literally every month by how well you
said. Meeting up by the polar bear and said, well, how'd we do, kids?
Right. How well you did on the cover every month. So you get your sales numbers about a month after it went on sale, and then you lived and died by those numbers.
Right. Did you ever see the slogan that was in Lee Kelly's office? The entire time I worked for them, when I started in 80, when I was at Hot Rod, I went to Argus for 5 years, came back, Carcraft, and then obviously worked for him again for another decade.
Uh-huh.
And in his office, he had this thing that was stuck on his wall. It was a saying, and it said, find an editor with vision and let him go.
Yes, yes.
That's exactly what it said, and you walk in any time, and that's what it was. So that's true to form.
Yeah.
So that's the way Lee was.
And that's the way Lee was. And that's, you know, really – on
that's
a grander
called
level.
Hiring somebody with talent and letting them use.
Yes,
and then
that's
trusting
why you
them
hired them
and trusting them to do that.
Yes,
So you know, in our case, I don't know if it was necessarily that prescient as much as it was. I was at the right place at the right time with a good group of people who were spectacularly good at what they did.
Right,
and all you did, because I did the same thing with them. Each of those guys, like Gray Baskerville, was fantastic at the things that he did.
Yes,
so you let him do those things. You didn't try and make him do something he wasn't good at, because he wouldn't be able to deliver for you. So you don't ask him to do that. But the feature stuff and that kind of stuff. There's a whole other story about a managing editor one time came in my office or a copy editor came in and said, you know, Gray Baskerville, he made this word up. Well, yeah, he did.
That's great.
Well, it's not in the AP style. It's a made-up word. You can't use that. It's like, sure you can. Well, why can't? Where does it say I can't? But you just don't.
Right.
Said, and it went on and on and on and on. Finally, I told her, I said, you know, you really should reconsider maybe a different job, because this is not working out for you, because we're not changing what Gray does, because Gray makes this magazine.
Right.
Someone asked me a long time ago what my influences were when I became when I went to journalism school and became a writer. It's like, do you have your writing influence? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Tom Wolfe, you know, who did the right stuff and the various about, you know, and all this stuff, and Gray Baskerville.
Right.
And the
Shrunk and White.
They're like polar opposite people.
That's
and
right.
like first guy I know who that is, but who is Gray Baskerville? I said, well, if you don't read Hot Rod magazine, you wouldn't know. But
old
if you did, you would read Hot Rod, and you would know. And dad was the it was he was
it's all Reed.
He was he was all Reed.
That's right.
Like he walked by my office. This usually happened right after Bonneville. Yeah, if you don't know who Gray Baskerville is, he was probably in his early 60s at this time. Late 50s, early 60s.
Been writing for Hot Rod
for
a long
magazine
time and very colorful.
Very colorful.
Had his own vocabulary.
Yes,
he did.
And would make words up, and it was just spectacular and a really good writer. And he walked by my office, and all of a sudden he saw him stick his head back in and go, and then walk away.
I had a similar deal. I was the new guy at Hot Rod, and it was like 1980 or something, and I'm sitting at my desk, and Gray goes by. And then he comes back and he tucks his head back. He goes, are you married? And I said, no. And he goes, well, I have a niece. and then he goes, well, maybe I'll introduce you. And then he leaves. And then he comes back and he goes, are you Mormon? And I said, no. And he goes, well, forget it.
So
that was quick.
We could do Peterson's stories
forever. Gray stories.
Gray stories.
So as a reader, because obviously these guys were the people making the print that I grew up reading, and Gray was a huge. You know, I loved reading his stuff because he was so colorful with how he'd write and his words. Thank
his
God
words.
You didn't modify his words.
The
and I knew. Like one of them with, it's so bitchin', right?
Bitchin'.
And so here I am with my 66 Charger on Power Tour.
Mm-hmm.
I unveiled it on Power Tour. I talked about it earlier,
right.
Creating that car. And we were in Tinley Park, Illinois, and Jeff Smith was setting up for the photo shoot. We went and shot the main, you know, front and rear three-quarter shots over at this, it's kind of like a loading dock area.
Okay.
And then we brought it back over to the whatever fairgrounds we were that night under a tree to do engine shots and interior shots, you know, get it out of harsh light.
Right.
And so I'm standing there and Jeff's, you know, clicking away on the engine and the interior, and Gray comes tooling
bopping
by.
Over.
Comes botting by. And
flip-flops.
And sandals ahoy. And he comes over and he looks and he just has that, you know, that grin.
The grin.
And just puts his hands in his pockets. And I go, what do you think? He goes, it's two bitching. And I'm like, I can die. I just got a two bitching from Gray Baskerville.
Right.
It's all okay now. Yes. I am now officially certified, but whatever that means.
And, you know,
he was so cool.
The thought that popped into my head was we could probably do another podcast on the characters,
yes,
the industry, because there are so many of them. That could go on forever, probably.
Yeah, that could go on forever.
But you could pick out the more colorful ones. And
there were some good ones.
Or in my case.
Well, it's just like racing. It's very versatile. I mean, the different personalities of.
Oh, yeah.
Back when CarCraft was more of a drag racing magazine than it was a Street Machine magazine, so the 70s, certainly late 60s, all the way through the 70s, they had something called Fast Talk. And it was my favorite part of the magazine because I would go to Fast Talk first. It was in the back of the book, and it was just quotes from drag racers. And a classic one, it was attributed to an anonymous source, but it says, and then when the manufacturer said he'd take a check, I ordered three more sets of pistons. And it's like, and that was every month. It was like that. What causes loose loose? Bang bang causes loose loose. So there's, I should maybe do. I did a list a long time ago of my favorite, like the 20,
you had a whole bunch of
sayings from
from
Fast
Talk. Did
they
do a special issue with some of that stuff? They did some elapsed times and some other stuff. Yeah. That was a pretty good deal.
As the entry level, wet behind the ears staffer, they immediately gave me et cetera, and you had to be funny.
Yes.
And it was, and we had some fun.
How's that working out for you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't quit my day job.
There you go. Good idea.
So anyway, that and
the Chrysler dealer?
Yes. Yeah. I always go back there and be a Chrysler mechanic. So this is just one story of hundreds that we could talk about.
Absolutely.
And if there's enough interest in this kind of stuff, we could dredge up a bunch more. Because I'm sure Cam's got a lot that he could talk about. The things that you learn, and the things you learn not to do, and the things you learn that will be positive and might actually enhance my career, and others that would be absolute career suicide. And sometimes you get a few of those career suicide ones and got away with it, but it's very rare. It's very rare.
You bet.
And
so,
it's neat as the reader, like I said, I ate, breathed, and slept my hot rod. Mm-hmm. I literally did. It's like the only thing I looked forward to every month. And when I was traveling and playing in the band, that was backstage with me.
Yeah.
It was my hot rod.
Yeah.
And so to be on the other side of it and hear about what even happened for that cover that I hold so dear, because I just loved it and I love that car.
Yeah.
To hear that's it's so interesting. It puts a different dynamic on it.
We had no way of knowing, but yet at the same time, you did know. We did know this was special. This was important, and it was worth it. I remember one point
got to drive it.
Yes.
Bastard.
So I mean, at one point, it was starting to get heated in this meeting. And at one point, because this happened a couple times, talk about career suicide kind of movements. But at one point, it was something was said on the other side, and I literally started to come out of my chair.
Yeah.
And Harry was sitting to my right, and he put his hand on my knee. And I was like,
Adolf, don't do that. Adolf kicked me, literally kicked me in the shin when we had a conversation about why the color changed on the masthead of CarCraft
when it was John Diana who did it.
And then it was like, oh, correct, Fred. They're right. That did. I don't know how that would have happened. It's like, you got to be kidding.
Yeah. So, it's like the kick under the table. Yeah, the same thing. So there's 100 stories like this. We could do more of them if you're interested in listening more of this. It's just a couple of guys talking about what happened to them in the past, but it's a lot of fun at the same time. You get a peek behind the curtain of what goes on the other side of the magazine. But I hope you enjoyed this, and if you do, listen up, and we'll do this again soon.